sunshine. However, I'm stuck inside. But thankfully, Dominic, I get to speak to you about the week ahead and the week that we've just had. How are you?
Ah, very well. Enjoying the quasi-tropical climate of Southern California. Just joking, it's been actually quite chilly.
It's honestly, it's the opposite here. But unfortunately, people haven't come to hear about the London weather. They're probably living it with me. So let's talk about the Fed. It was an interesting, not interesting event, to put it sort of plainly. We've had some language change. We've obviously had we have an incoming job change, and we've had some dissent. So why don't we go through all three of those, and we can get your take. So the first one is just a statement. Why don't we start with the statement? I mean, what did you make of the inflation language?
So the Fed upgraded the inflation language, but it's really like reading the tea leaves of during the Soviet Union era, people pouring through the Politburo communique, and you have a little nuance, one word instead of another. So they slightly upgraded the inflation language. Also, I think the gist of the press conference is that if Chair Powell was staying on, the Fed would move to neutral bias from currently easing bias. So there would be another tweak in the statement to be perceived only with people well versed in the English language. I mean, a slight nuance to indicate that they are moving to a neutral stance. But we are changing leadership.
I mean, very much on that leadership. We had an update from Powell. Do you want to go through that? And then number two is we're going to obviously have Warsh take over. Do you think he's going to be a different leader of the Fed?
So let's start with Chair Powell. So Chair Powell is a lawyer by training. He's also had quite eventful dealings with the administration. So given the ambiguous language the DOJ used to announce that they were dropping the lawsuit, which one was done by tweet, so maybe this administration will be described in history books as government by tweets. But the tweet had a sentence saying that the lawsuit could be restarted later on if the facts warranted it. So, based on his experience and qualification, Chair Powell thought it justified him staying on as governor. Which is not at all what the administration wanted because there is a legal restriction on the number of governors. There can only be seven. So there are seven right now since Powell is staying on to bring in Warsh. The administration will have to ask Miron to go. But to be honest, these are mechanical details. What's important here is that Powell indicated he one was taking Warsh protestation that he was fully independent, that he Powell was going to take them at face value, which makes a lot of sense to me. But so staying on to make sure that the lawsuit was well and truly dropped. Clearly, he used some fairly good language on wanting a clean judicial break from the administration. So he said, I'm going to be a very low-key governor, and it's Kevin Warsh who is now the chair, and that's that. So you'd think this gives the administration a very strong incentive to make it clear that they have no intention to restart the lawsuit. But then there was a string of criticism from Secretary Bessent, from President Trump, from National Economic Council Chair, another Kevin Hassett. That this was not on, poor shape, and so on and so forth. Those guys are their own worst enemies. They should just take their losses. They had to drop the lawsuit in order to get Walsh through. It's done. If they would stop the comments, then, you know, Powell and all of us could move on, really. But it looks like they just want to prolong the episode. So Chair Powell is going to be around as governor for quite some time, mostly.
I mean, maybe let's concentrate on the more positives, leave the lawsuit aside. What do you think Walsh will be like as a leader of the Fed? Will he be able to skew things more dovish?
Well, so I think he has grand plans. And to be fair, I think some of his criticism of the Fed are warranted. I think the market is overinterpreting his dovish side. There is an argument as to whether AI, you know, is lifting the potential growth rate for the economy. It's an argument that's going to get decided on data and logic within the FOMC. I don't think Kevin Walsh is going to keep repeating, you know, cut, cut, cut. I think he's a more sophisticated thinker. I also think he realizes he will need to convince his colleagues. And my interpretation, based on everything I've heard from him and read, is that he's actually more of a hawk than a dove. But we'll see. The one thing that's sure is that he's coming as chair, having made this strong worded criticism. So he's going to have to repair bridges with his colleagues. And I don't know him personally, but based on his presentation style, I have a hunch that his people skills are going to get challenged. So let's see how that works out. I mean, seriously, we need a good discussion about, you know, inflation, about the Fed balance sheet, about the culture of consensus. So I hope this is what we get through the Walsh chairmanship. In fact, I'm sure we will get some of that.
And I mean, in terms of his people skills, maybe they matter a touch less for this, but how will he deal with the dissent?
Well, no, but that's it. That's what Powell explained. And Powell was actually quite candid in the way he explained how he managed to get a consensus on the FOMC. Basically, and he's repeated that several times during his chairmanship. He said, okay, if you listen to people and you give them a sense that they are being listened to, their views are respected, they'll come along. So, honestly, I think he's done a great job. And in this last presser, Powell made clear that, you know, this was the essence of the role of the chair, that having a view was not enough. You needed to get the 11 other voters to come along. So we'll see how that works out.
Fair enough. It sounds like you're a fan of Powell. We can say that.
Well, it's an extraordinarily difficult job. At the same time, you know, the Fed, like all old institutions, has a lot of inertia. It's very hard to bring change around. So it's great to get someone in with new ideas. It's just that bringing change while keeping the Fed existing capabilities, you know, on delivering, on policy implementation, economic assessment, and so on and so forth, is going to be a challenge.
And then maybe we shift away from people for a tiny bit and focus on your favorite thing, data. This week we had core PCE and spending. You know, we had the big releases all at the same time. You know, the thing perhaps I'm struggling with, and I'm guessing everyone else may be struggling with, is that, you know, core PCE seemed okay again. Spending seemed quite strong. I think it was 0.9%. The question I have is, number one, what's driving that? And then number two, can it continue?
So Spending, so in real terms, this was closer to zero than 1%, of course. And that's the issue that nominal income adjusts more slowly to inflation. So whenever you have a burst of inflation, you have a decrease in real wages and real income, since wages are most of consumer income. But I have to say, consumption keeps getting stronger than I expect. And it's largely because of the decline in the household savings rate. If you look at household real income, yeah, it's really getting dinged by the increase in oil prices. But somehow, households managed to offset that with a decrease in the savings rate. And the savings rates are about 3.5% before the GFC. Just before the GFC, they were 2%. So they are the lowest since the GFC. And so that suggests we are, you know, getting close to the sort of historical low. And that there are limits to that to that.
And maybe to ask ask too much of an obvious question here. I mean, what happens when we do hit, say, 2% savings rate?
Well, the last time we hit it, it was not pretty. But what's interesting, so when you have lower savings rate, what basically it means is that your accumulation, your net accumulation of financial assets is slower. And net means assets minus liabilities. And what is absolutely fascinating here is that if you look at consumer liabilities, so relative to income, housing liability, so mortgages, it's quite flat. But you have consumer debt falling relative to income, especially credit card and auto loans, which by the way, is consistent with the decline in auto sales that we've been seeing. So what is going on there is that extra consumption is not funded through higher debt. So in that sense, the decline in the savings rate is not as worrying as it was before the GFC, because you had an enormous increase in debt. It's funded through slower accumulation of stocks, bank deposits, and so it's very consistent with this K-shaped pattern where you have, you know, well-off household supporting the economy by saving less, and the rest really struggling, being forced to deleverage. You know, we have very high delinquency rates on car and on credit card loans. And it's not a very healthy state of affairs, especially since the decline in the savings rate for the well-off asset is probably supported by equity market gains. So you have this negative relationship between net wealth and savings. And so it's a little bit like a bootstrap equilibrium, you know, where you have the equity market going up, partly due to positive expectations on tech. So that fuels consumption, but that also fuels AI-related capex, which is the other pillar of growth at the moment. So if investors are having doubts, or if we have global supply chain that no longer function because of the Gulf War, all that house of cards could collapse. I mean, we're not there.
Let's dive into that. I mean, how long could this continue for? It could, you know, can we just keep chugging along for another 6 months, or do you think something worse is coming down the corridor?
So we probably could keep chugging along for a while if oil prices didn't rise further. And if we didn't start having supply chain disruption, I was starting to get hints of supply chain disruption, like the PMIs this morning. PMI, if you look at the suppliers index, which is an index of the slowness of suppliers delivery, it's clearly up. And next week we are getting the New York Fed Global Supply Chain Index, which I think is also going to show that supply chains are tightening. So if things don't get settled quickly in the Middle East, I think we're going to start seeing a drag from the war on the US economy. Lower household real income, I think the higher uncertainty and the disruption to supply are going to hit CapEx and employment. And also other countries. I mean, the paradox here is that the US really started the war of its own initiative, but is the least exposed in terms of supply chain disruption, because we have, of course, we are energy self-sufficient. That said, if you look at the ratio of energy consumption to GDP, it's higher in the US than in in Western Europe, for instance. So we're going to get hit by higher prices harder than Western Europe. Western Europe, of course, is going to get hit, is already getting hit. I don't know what are your summer travel plans, Ben, but I'm hearing that jet fuel is kind of a short supply in your neck of the woods. So Europe is going to get hit by supply constraint. I mean, physical, so supply constraint. We won't.
And maybe just looking at implications in terms of data that's coming out next week, we have NFP coming out. Obviously, last month was quite a good month. Unemployment rate, I believe it fell. The NFP, that as in terms of jobs through March, increased quite impressively. What's your read and what's your expectation going forward for NFP and the unemployment rate? Have we sort of hit a status quo now, or are things going to worsen, and we're actually just resting before things get a bit worse?
So the labor market is also proved more resilient than I expected. So the thing is, NFPs, if you look at the change, they've become much more volatile. And I think that has to do with the fact that we are in a zero labor supply growth economy. So you don't have a pool of available labor that comes into the labor market every month. And that makes for a relatively smooth series. Now, what we have is a big increase and big decreases. And I suspect this is a long time, a structural feature of the zero labor increase economy. So we need to look at longer term averages to get the picture. But even with this in mind, it's true that we've had a big NFP last month. This month the market's presenting 60. So even a 6 month moving average is going to show improvement. And excuse me, if you the tropical climate of Southern California is not quite working out for me. And then if you look at jobless claim, it's really fallen to a very low level this week. So, even keeping in mind my view that, there is no job growth, so people who get unemployed lose their benefit after a period of time. Even with this view, I think the labor market is more resilient than I thought it would be. And one big question, of course, is whether the administration has relaxed the enforcement of immigration policy, which could explain why we have a rebound in NFP and which would be positive for growth.
And I mean, just to translate that into sort of Fed views, I mean, how would that impact your, let's call it, quite dovish Fed cuts in view. As in, if the, let's, for argument's sake, let's paint someone out here. The unemployment rate sits vaguely where it is now, around 4.3%. NFP, okay, it's volatile, but it sits on average positive, and wage growth is nothing incredible, but nothing awful. It's 0.2, 0.3 every month. I mean, what does that do to your, what would that, number one, do to the Fed in terms of how they digest it? And number two, would that change your Fed view at all?
So I think this doesn't really change my 55% view, which is recession, for all the reasons we just discussed. I think this change is more the good scenario where the US manages to escape recession. I mean, I suspect that even Kevin Warsh, even someone with a fairly dovish outlook, if you have that much increase in headline inflation, and you will have some of it bleeding into core a little bit, like transportation. So in order to cut, you will need to see a tangible sign that the economy is weakening. So this, if the NFP turns out to be the NFP consensus turns out to be correct, I think my view of the, you know, the no recession scenario, we still get a cut because there is no inflationary pressure in the economy, and there isn't. I mean, to me, what is extraordinary, we had a decrease in immigration, a net decrease. People got ex 2.5 million people got expelled, most of them working age. And yet, last year, and yet, wage growth continued to slow. So, to me, this is a very strong sign that there are no inflationary pressure in this economy. So, if we get the sort of situation where, you know, there is no inflationary pressure, but you still have a big increase in headline inflation, I don't think the Fed would cut without tangible signs that, you know, economic risk are increasing. So if that situation of low and stable unemployment continues, and we avoid a recession, I don't think the Fed will cut this year. But fortunately for me, things never stay stable. So we'll see. There's going to be another two, three big surprises, and I will have to make a 360 again. I mean, seriously, it's so hard to forecast with this sort of backdrop.
Okay, and then maybe to finish this off, we can concentrate on the people that have to do this as a job and set policy, the Fed speakers. So are there any of them you're paying attention to next week?
I mean, I always pay attention, but the most important in my view, Williams, centrist, Moosalem, Hawke, and then we have Waller, Bauman, and Daley taking part in a panel. But honestly, they are just going to restate their view. The one person we need to hear from is Warsh. And until he takes over from Chair Powell on the 15, he's probably not going to make any official pronouncements.
Amazing. Unless there's anything else you want to discuss, it's been great talking to you, Don.
Likewise.
It's always a pleasure of mine when I get to jump on this call with you. And thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Have a good weekend.
Good luck, everybody.